Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Journeys into Mind, Heart, and Soul. I'm Rabbi Wayne Dossick, inviting you to come on the journey, join in the quest. Spirit Talk Live is our monthly forum for exploring the great questions of existence, for joining in the quest to find meaning and worth in life through intellectual inquiry and sacred spirit. It is a worldwide conversation for spiritual seekers and rational empiricists, for people of all religions and of no religion, of all faiths and of no faith, because here on Spirit Talk Live, everything is sacred and nothing is sacred. Well, welcome, welcome, welcome to this month's edition of Spirit Talk Live. My voice is still a little raspy from conducting high holiday services, so I hope you'll forgive me the rasp. And before I introduce you to our guest today, I'd like to remind you of my newest book, Radical Loving, One God, One World, One People, Monkfish Publishers, a compelling appraisal of the state of our present-day world, and a bold, visionary, spirit-filled blueprint for its transformation and evolution through radical loving and awesome holiness. It is a call to oneness, a promise that Eden can be on Earth once again. You can find out more about the book at the website radicallovingbook.com. It is a very important book for this time, this moment in world history, so I hope you'll take a look at it. Well, welcome, welcome, welcome. I'm delighted today to welcome to Spirit Talk Live. Actually, it's his second time here. He was here once before with one of his earlier books. My distinguished colleague, Rabbi Jeffrey K. Salkin, he's here with his book, Repairing Our People. Rabbi Salkin has had a distinguished career as a pulpit rabbi, and he is one of America's most quoted rabbis from his blog, Martini Judaism, for those who want to be shaken and stirred. He's the author of numerous books and scholarly essays on Jewish identity, the Bible, Israel, gender politics, Jewish culture, and he's here to discuss his newest book called, in Hebrew, Tikkun Ha'am, Israel and the Crisis of Liberal Judaism, Repairing Our People. Rabbi Salkin has many, many other great qualities, and one of them being one of the first Jews to receive the Doctor of Ministry degree from Princeton Theological Seminary. He's recently moved, I believe, from South Florida to New Jersey. We'll find out why he did that. And I think he has some other credentials that he'd like to share with us as well. But before we go into that, let's welcome him to Spirit Talk Live, Rabbi Jeffrey K. Salkin. Rabbi Salkin, welcome, welcome.
So great to be with you, Rabbi Dossick. Thank you, and thank you, and much luck on your new book. It sounds like it's a fascinating read. Looking forward to that.
Thank you, thank you. I know that you have other credentials that I failed to mention. Please tell us about them.
Well, I recently founded, along with Dr. Sandra Lilienthal and Rabbi Eddie Feinstein, a new organization called Wisdom Without Walls, an online salon for Jewish ideas. You can find us at wisdomwithoutwalls.org. We sponsor twice a month conversations between Jews all over the world and significant Jewish thought leaders, and our major theme is how do you live Jewishly and humanly in the wake of October 7th. So we hope to see as many of you as possible.
I remember running into you and Rabbi Feinstein in Jerusalem this past summer.
Absolutely right.
Yeah. And I also recall with great fondness a conversation that we had two or three summers ago, sitting in Jerusalem at the crepe and ice cream store, where we talked about lengthy careers in the rabbinate, and we congratulated each other on our great successes and our publications and our published and all that we did. You are one of the great thinkers of American Judaism today, and I remember that conversation with great affection.
Thank you. And I, at the risk of being gratuitous, you also have thought creatively over the years. And I think what those have in common is that we've kind of had a unconventional rabbinate, and that's a good thing.
Well, that's true. I've been in San Diego for 49 years, three different pulpits, but 49 years and a university professorship. You've moved from place to place. Tell us a little bit about your various pulpits, your various incarnations as you grew in the rabbinate.
Well, I'll tell you, Rabbi, I took the traditional Jacob's ladder through my career, rung by rung, small congregation, mid-sized congregation, ultimately to a large congregation. When that match was not as good as it needed to be, for me or for them, I rethought my career. I created an educational institution, went to a small congregation, ultimately wound up in Florida. But the writing has been the constant theme, and it's been something that has always brought me a lot of joy and a lot of meaning, which is to say that I'm able to touch lives of people whom I don't even know.
Well, at this stage in our careers, I either wrote the book or I know the person who wrote the book in our field. And I must say that I don't read a whole lot anymore because it's very repetitious in many ways. You, I read all the time, your blog, Martini Judaism. You are a brilliant writer and a tremendous analyst of the Jewish and the American, actually the whole world scene. So I would tell our listeners today that Rabbi Jeff Salkin is worth reading.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you. And what's going on in your world? What's on your mind these days?
What's on my mind is what's on your mind is what is the Jewish world and the whole world look like post-October 7th?
So, I'm glad you asked. I have to tell you the following story, which I think you'll find interesting. I wrote this book, Tikkun HaOm, Repairing Our People, Israel and the Crisis of Liberal Judaism, essentially because I believe that there's a crisis in the non-Orthodox world. It's a crisis of meaning. And so what I decided to do was I decided to do a series of essays on where liberal Judaism is in America, and not only that, but to essentially craft what I think a future could look like. All right, that's done. So the book is ready to be published. And it's October 6th. It's ready to go to the printer. October 7th happens. And I know that I cannot write this book the way I had written it. I knew that it needed a new introduction, because what I knew at that moment, and I think your readers would probably agree, is that we are in a new moment in American Judaism and in world Judaism. We are in a post-October 7th era, and that needs to be understood and it needs to be analyzed.
And on one foot, in we're still in the midst of it. I spent 5 weeks in Israel this summer, going from the site of the Nova Festival to the kibbutzim that were decimated, to the north where the rockets fall. I know that you were in Israel at the same time. We saw each other for a moment. What did you see? And what's your, I don't even know the word feeling, but your gestalt of what's going on right now?
Well, I think, number one, there has been a redressing of the balance between universalism, I care for all people, and particularism, I care especially for my people. I think a lot of American Jews, post-October 7th, have discovered that they are more particularistic, caring more about their people than they had once imagined. So much of non-orthodoxy in America has been built on a foundation of universalism. In other words, when we hear that mantra, if I am only for myself, who will be for me? If I'm not for myself, what am I? You know, that if I'm not for myself, who will be for me? If I'm only for myself, what am I? Most of us have lived, I think, in the second statement. In other words, we believe that we have to be for all people. October 7th, I think, was a control-alt-delete, a hard reset, a reboot, and we realize how particularistic we really are. I think that many American Jews now understand and continue to understand that anti-Semitism in America is still a thing. I was reflecting on my career, Rabbi, and having been a rabbi for 45 years, a shorter amount of time than you, there was a period probably in the mid-80s where I either poo-pooed or downplayed the reality of anti-Semitism in America. I thought that it was passé. After all, we are so unhated that Gentile families are lining up to have their kids marry our kids. Our kids can get into any school they want to. And then October 7th happened. Before that, of course, the premonition would have been the massacre Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh. But when we see the outbreak of anti-Semitism, especially on the college campuses, and especially among people who we think would know better, it really has been, I think, extremely, extremely shocking, and continues to be so. The third thing, I think, that I want to emphasize, bringing this all back home, is that we discovered in the wake of October 7th the truth that we had not wanted to encounter, which is that many of our young people were in college, had to face the challenges that were being thrown at them and had no data with which to do so. Because the dropout rate after bar mitzvah and bat mitzvah in America is so high, most of our young people, the radical majority of our young people, are getting no Jewish education beyond the age of puberty, therefore have no sense of really what modern Jewish history is, what Zionism is, what Israel is. They may have good feelings about Judaism, by the way, I'm not putting that down, but when it came to fending off the challenges of their classmates and even their professors, they were clueless. So in some ways we failed them, or I would say that the communal Jewish world never made Jewish education as much a priority as it needed to be. That's just my short list of wake-up moments.
And I would add to that, and I ask you to comment, that we have, within the Jewish community, which is stunning to me, anti-Zionists in groups like JVP, Jewish Voices for Peace, and others, who are against not only what Israel might be doing at this moment, but against Israel's existence. Jews who are against the existence of the Jewish state. I try to point out the old song that we taught kids when we were little, Yisrael Kutshav Rifu Devi'araita Chadhu, Israel, that is, the people in the land, God and Torah are all one. But some people are moving far away from that. Your comments.
It's an erroneous and, I would say, heretical rewrite of Jewish history and sacred literature. Look, here we are. We're on the edge of the festival of Sukkot, which celebrates the agricultural cycle of the land of Israel. Are you really telling me, folks, that the land of Israel is incidental to Judaism? It's at the core of it. Moreover, modern Jewish history is a constant thrust towards the understanding that Jewish sovereignty is a moral and political and a national necessity. Now, as soon as those words leave my mouth, I hasten to say that, of course, Israel's actions are by no means perfect. It's a nation state, and nation states, as far as I know, have not yet celebrated the coming of the Messianic Age, and they make serious errors of judgment and policy. But as I've had to say to people, we want a better Israel. We're up against people who want no Israel at all. We believe that we need to correct some of the military, if not errors, then at least excesses of, let us say, 1967, the territories after the Six-Day War. These are people who don't care much about 67. They actually care about 1948. They believe that the creation of the state itself was a primal sin. And we have to say to those people, we're sorry, you're wrong. That some of them, many of them are our own kids, goes to, number one, a serious lack of Jewish education. Number two, I think, and this is why I call my book Tikkun Ha'am rather than Tikkun Olam, we have overstressed, I think, social justice in liberal Judaism. We have overstressed what it means to repair the world, and we have not fully embraced the idea that we have to teach our kids that they're part of a family called the Jewish people. And I think that these are all issues that must be dealt with, and I say this with sadness, and I don't think it's too late.
You wrote this book before October 7th, and so you had the necessity to talk about these issues before October 7th. What motivated you at that point to write this book?
The book had been churning inside me for quite some time. I had come to the understanding that even and especially as a Reform rabbi, it felt to me that some of the working propositions of Reform Judaism, as they were initially put together, were no longer valid. The Pittsburgh platform, which de-emphasized ethnicity, which de-emphasized mitzvot, which de-emphasized ritual commandments, and de-emphasized certainly Zionism, has been seen to be, if not a failure, then at least something that must be relegated to the past. I do believe that it's still part of our DNA. So I do write a lot about that. I write about what it means for us to be tribal, if not tribalistic. But tribalistic, I mean to be chauvinism, to be vulgar comparisons between ourselves and non-Jews, those cute Yiddish vocabulary words that I will not repeat on air. But tribal in the sense of we are a large collection of interwoven families, in the same way that Native Americans or Indians would be, I think is an important element of who we are. I also talk a little bit about what I would call religious skittishness in America, this ubiquitous thing that you see on Facebook, to those who celebrate, as if to say, Happy Rosh Hashanah, friends, or sweet year, everyone, as if to say that we are so embarrassed about publicly walking out our faith. The other fun thing that I do in the book is that I believe that we can look at certain secular Jewish cultural heroes and reclaim them for Judaism, such as my Holy Trinity, Bob Dylan, Paul Simon, the late Leonard Cohen, Steven Spielberg, for example. I think these are all people who have created work that speaks of Judaism, even if they themselves do not readily admit to it.
I was going to ask you about that, but before I do that, let me just ask you about one comment that you were making now. We have, and you write about this, Ashkenormality. When we talk about the Judaism in America, it is Ashkenazic central, I guess, would be a word to put it, or you put it normativity. Talk about that for a minute.
Well, as you know, I just recently returned from Poland. I spent the High Holy Days in Warsaw conducting services for one of the progressive congregations there. So you might say that I have been in the heartland of Ashkenormativity for the last 2 weeks. It's also possible to say that you cannot talk about the Jews without talking about Poland, and you can't talk about Poland without talking about the Jews. But when I say Ashkenormativity, what I basically mean is the assumption that all Jews come from a Central and Eastern European Jewish background, and that our cultural references tend to be heavily laden with that. And in so doing, we run the risk of erasing Jews who come from Sephardic backgrounds, from Mizrahi, which is, say, Arab Jewish backgrounds, and especially the many people who are Jews by choice. The fascinating thing about the Poland experience, which your listeners may want to think more about, the overwhelming number of people that I dealt with when I was in Poland at services and in the Jewish community are either A, not born Jewish, which is to say they're converts, or B, they're on the way to becoming Jewish. The curiosity, both spiritually and intellectually, among people in Poland about things Jewish is outrageous. It's redemptive. Someone said to me before I went, you know, you're going to a Jewish graveyard. And when I came back, I said to that person, no, I was actually in a Jewish maternity ward. This is where we're giving birth to Jews.
And of all the places you could have gone for these high holidays, how did you choose Warsaw, and how did Warsaw choose you?
Well, I guess I got lucky. They invited me to do services, and so there I was. It was a very, very powerful experience, and certainly to interact with people in this congregation, with people who I think are really feeling what it means to be Jewish, who are very, very much a part of the Jewish story, the new Jewish story, as they are now encountering it. It was really, really a redemptive moment, and I was so thrilled to be able to do that.
I assume you don't speak Polish, so we'll find out how you communicated with your congregation in Warsaw when we come back after these messages. And I want to find out more about Paul Simon, Bob Dylan, and Eliezer HaKohen, Leonard Cohen. This is Spirit Talk Live. I'm Rabbi Wayne Dasik, along with Rabbi Jeffrey Salkin, the author of Tikkun Ha'am, Repairing Our People. It is Wicked Sun Press. He is one of America's most distinguished and articulate rabbis. This is Spirit Talk Live. As always, we invite you to come on the journey. Join in the quest.
In sacred literature and the Bible, God is known by many names. However, which name for God embodies the spiritual wholeness and essence of God? Discover The Real Name of God is a new book by Rabbi Wayne Dasik. He explores and finds the real name of God. Why is that important? Because the name of God unites all religions and is embedded within us. Get The Real Name of God at your favorite bookstore or online at Amazon.com. The ideas in this book can be world-changing. The Real Name of God by Rabbi Wayne Dasik.
When you're looking for bedding, department store prices can shock you. Well, be shocked no more. Sell steak cheap, not cheap steak. That's the motto of Anna's Linens. Although they don't sell steak, they do sell the best bedding, bath, and home decor items. They strive to provide their merchandise at extreme value to their customers, and they do it. Great everyday prices on everything and military discounts. Plus, if you visit them online, they have clearance items and internet specials. Visit them online now at HealthyLife.net's advertiser page.
Save the Animals Today offers a respectable retirement and end-of-life experience for all the horses that have been abandoned as they age. Not a day goes by that people don't call Save the Animals Today looking for a place for their horses. Patty and the folks at Save the Animals Today do their best to bring as many horses as they possibly can to beautiful Dudette Ranch to love them and care for them. Dudette Ranch is a special place. Horses and other farm animals enjoy the peaceful sanctuary of the lovely hills north of San Diego. Volunteers of all ages come to interact with and take care of these wonderful creatures. Older folks who had horses when they were growing up and now have some free time especially enjoy helping around the barn with animals who want the extra attention. Save the Animals Today would like to provide shelter for every farm animal who needs rescue. Right now, there's a waiting list. Dudette Ranch needs your help. The horses need your help. You can help these magnificent animals by making a tax-deductible donation to Save the Animals Today. $25 will make a difference, and $25 a month will mean another older horse will enjoy its older years, loved and cared for. If you want to help even more, visit the website at www.savetheanimalstoday.org.
Music, information, and friends. HealthyLife.net.
We're back. It's Spirit Talk Live. I'm Rabbi Wayne Dasik, along with my distinguished and esteemed colleague, Rabbi Jeffrey K. Salkin. What's the K for, Rabbi?
Well, technically, it's for tenor. Though when people ask me, I usually say it's a memory of my mother's, my late mother's maiden name, which is Carpel.
But
you know, when I was born, it was really a fad to give Jewish kids Gaelic names. Made someone wonder whether there were people in Glasgow who named their kids Yisrael, because there are so many Jewish kids whose names are Scott.
Yeah, well, I long in my, I once named a baby naming or birth, I named the kid Sean Noel in loving memory of his grandfather Shmuel Nuchum. I want to live long enough to name a kid Shmuel Nuchum in loving memory of his grandfather Sean Noel. I don't think it's going to happen.
I
get asked constantly in Yiddish, what kind of Neumann is Vane for a rabbi? What kind of name is Wayne for a rabbi? So, of course.
And your answer is?
Every Wayne, William, Walter of our generation is Ze'ev Velvel.
Yeah, absolutely right.
Wolf, which was in the name, and so our parents, I was born in 1947, the stench of Auschwitz was still in people's nostrils, and our parents here in America wanted to protect us, so they gave us very American names.
Got it. I get it.
That's the way it was. So,
but it's interesting how the assimilationist thing seems to have played out, hasn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So now and then we get a Shlomo or a Zalman or a Michael or a David, but not too often.
Exactly.
So how did you communicate with your congregation? I assume you don't speak Polish. How did you communicate?
Well, the Machzor itself is in Polish and in Hebrew, so I was able to follow the Hebrew. Woman serving as Chazan was able to lead responsive readings or group readings, unison readings in Polish. And my sermons and my teachings were simultaneously translated into Polish by an extremely skilled and very, very adept and flexible translator. So that worked very well.
What a great
Plus, I think many people do understand English.
What a great gig. You going back next year?
If they invite me, yes, it would be a pleasure. As I said, I made some very good friendships there, and I was really moved by so much of what I experienced.
Fantastic. What a great thing. What a great thing. This is in many ways what we call in Hebrew, Mechayim Esim, the resurrection of the dead.
It's so funny you say that, because I reflected on the fact that their machzor, like our liturgy, in the Gevurot prayer, has both Mechayei HaKol, who gives life to all things, and Mechayei HaMeitim, who revives and resurrects the dead. And so I started the service by saying, I always wanted to do Mechayei HaKol. I was always skittish about the idea of resurrection, but I have to tell you, seeing you and seeing what's going on in this community Jewishly mm-hmm. now makes me believe in the resurrection of the dead.
Mm-hmm.
Also, when you walk around Warsaw, and especially in the area near the synagogue, look, it's the ghetto, but the ghetto was totally destroyed, and you're looking at buildings and apartments that are built on mounds of rubble. And rumor has it that if... It's a little grisly image that if you kick at the rubble, your foot will uncover human bones. And so, for the Friday night service, I preach very briefly on that little throwaway verse in the Chadodei. You know, even if the Ta al Tila, a city built upon its tell, upon its ruins, and said that it's not only Jerusalem that's built on ruins, but also Warsaw.
Well, it sounds as if you smiled your way through it. I probably would have wept my way through it.
Quietly, I wept, but I publicly smiled. There's a lot to smile about.
Good for you. Wow, what a big mitzvah! What a joyous thing to do.
You know, I was discussing with an Episcopalian friend of mine, colleague, and I said, you know, this is the closest I've ever come to doing mission work.
Mm-hmm.
This was mission work.
Yeah. So I was going to ask you about why you finished the book with Paul Simon and Bob Dylan and Leonard Cohen, and I was missing Carole King. I thought you might write about her. Of all the things you're writing about in terms of Jewish life, why these musicians? I know that you're a great musician yourself and a great lover of music, but why a book about the, in many ways, the resurrection of Judaism in America, or at least a different direction for it, with these musicians who became so popular in the secular world as well?
Well, that's precisely why, because I wanted to show that even secular Jewish artists might actually have something to contribute to the larger Jewish conversation. Now, if we take them in sequence, Dylan has gone back and forth between a Jewish identity and sometimes an evangelical Christian identity, but many of his songs really do have Jewish themes in them and sometimes even Jewish lyrics in them. I argue in the book that his book on the philosophy of modern song, which is not about Judaism at all, is actually a work in which he analyzes songs from the Great American Songbook and really uses a midrashic style in trying to understand what those songs are about. It's a hidden identity that comes to the surface. Or let's take, for example, Paul Simon. Paul Simon has often shied away from public demonstrations of his Jewish identity. But again, there are times in his work where he has allowed that identity to come through. In a song from Still Crazy After All These Years, Silent Eyes, it's about Jerusalem, and it's almost a remake of Lamentations. But in his most recent work, which he believes will be his final work, Seven Psalms, he actually writes modern psalms with new metaphors for God. In fact, I taught about this in Poland. I said that one of the issues with God is that we must constantly evolve new metaphors for what we think the eternal is trying to do in our lives. And then, of course, Leonard Cohen, of blessed memory, who was, of all of them, the deepest. He was thoroughly immersed in Judaism, as was his family in Montreal. He was a literary figure who used Judaism notoriously in his work and in his songs. And in his final song, which won a Grammy posthumously, You Want It Darker, in a recent essay I say that he actually might have foreseen the events of October 7th. And in that song he's saying to God, weeks before he dies, Hineni, I'm ready, my Lord. Mm-hmm. Now, you're wondering, why not Carole King? It really begs a larger question. I started writing a book a number of years ago called Rock of Israel, about Jewish rock stars, not as a coffee table book and not as a look who's Jewish book, but I was interested in what Jewish rock stars and singer-songwriters actually incorporated Jewish themes in their work. And Carole King actually doesn't, though she does have a song called Been to Canaan. It's either about Canaan, Connecticut, or it's about Canaan as in the land of Israel.
Well, we'll find out more about Carole King, or lack thereof, when we come back after these messages. I'm here with Rabbi Jeffrey Salkin, author of Tikkun Ha'am, Israel and the Crisis of Liberal Judaism, Repairing Our People, Wicked Sun Press, a fairly new press, I think, but maybe we'll find out more about it. Rabbi Salkin is one of Jewish Americans' greatest commentators in his blog, Martini Judaism. When we come back, we'll find out how to subscribe to Martini Judaism. This is Spirit Talk Live. I'm Rabbi Wayne Dussick. As always, inviting you to come on the journey. Join in the quest.
In sacred literature and the Bible, God is known by many names. However, which name for God embodies the spiritual wholeness and essence of God? Discover The Real Name of God is a new book by Rabbi Wayne Dossick. He explores and finds the real name of God. Why is that important? Because the name of God unites all religions and is embedded within us. Get The Real Name of God at your favorite bookstore or online at Amazon.com. The ideas in this book can be world-changing. The Real Name of God by Rabbi Wayne Dossick.
In 1972, Sur La Table opened in Seattle, selling hard-to-find kitchen items, and now they have 55 stores nationwide, offering kitchen tools from around the world to prepare any cuisine. Sur La Table has a full range of houseware and kitchen products, even books and food. Visit a Sur La Table store, or better yet, for faster service, go to thehealthylife.net's advertiser page and click on Sur La Table. With the best products, gift cards, and sale items, you can be on your way to being a first-class cook right now.
Do you wonder what is happening in our world? Do you wonder what the forces of the universe are doing to us? Is your life affected by the ebb and flow of events over which you seem to have little control? The answers to these questions and more can be found in the internet publication Cosmic Times, Spiritual News You Can Use, a bimonthly channel transmission from Ellen Kaufman Dossick. Since 1994, the Cosmic Times has offered detailed information about what is happening energetically in our cosmos and how we can best support the emerging consciousness within ourselves and our world. Many people feel like the Cosmic Times keeps them sane in a seemingly crazy world, lifts their vibrations, and supports their continuing growth and expansion. You can subscribe to the Cosmic Times by going to the website www.soulmemorydiscovery.com. Join the thousands who benefit from the wisdom and insights in the Cosmic Times and receive spiritual news you can use. www.soulmemorydiscovery.com.
Information, entertainment, worldwide. HealthyLife.net.
We're back. I'm Rabbi Wayne Dossick. As always, this is Spirit Talk Live for the last 15 years. And I'm here with Rabbi Jeffrey Salkin, who's been with us actually for the second time. He was here the first time to talk about his book about the Torah readings, each weekly Torah reading for bar mitzvah boys, bar mitzvah girls, and actually for all of us. That, too, is a brilliant book. Jewish Publication Society published that. Tell us for a moment about Wicked Sun Publishers, Rabbi. I don't know about it too much.
Well, Wicked Sun was founded as a special imprint by a man named Adam Bello. You might have known his father, Saul Bello, the Nobel Prize-winning literary figure.
Sure.
And I think Wicked Sun purports to be what they say they are, which is the wicked son of the Seder who asks very hard questions. Now, a number of their books might be characterized as right-wing or right-of-center. They certainly have that particular reputation, but I'll be very clear and say they've also published Hillel Halkin, Ami Hirsch, etc., Shira Dicker, various new works of literature and short stories. And I don't know if your readers know this, but so much of what is going on in the Jewish world has meant that the publishing industry has shrunken. The publishing industry has shrunken anyway in America. That's a whole other story.
Okay.
But there is a crisis going on in terms of the way the words and ideas are put forth. And I frankly would be very sad if it all just became TikTok.
You're right. Well, you and I were both published by Jewish Lights, and you and your acknowledgments give great praise to Stuart Matlins, who was our publisher, well deserved. And actually, Annabella and I grew up in the same neighborhood, Hyde Park and South Shore in Chicago, and his father, the great Sal Bello, was at the University of Chicago.
Mm.
So there we are. Go back to long time ago. So a little bit more about Carole King and why she was not in your list.
Well, as I said before the break, I just don't see anything Jewish in what Carole King has written. I haven't paid that much attention to it. As I said, almost snarkily, great song, Been to Canaan. We don't know if that's about Canaan, Connecticut, Canaan, Massachusetts, or Canaan as in the land of Canaan, the land of Israel. I could have talked about Janice Ian. Janice Ian probably wrote the most poignant song in popular music about the Holocaust. That's a song called Tattoo, in which a girl who has been tattooed in a concentration camp is meditating on the meaning of this scar and this this marking on her body. That was one of the problems with this book, which is that there are very few Jewish women in there. There are Jewish women who were rock stars, the late Amy Winehouse, for example, but very few of them who are actually creating stuff in a Jewish milieu.
Mm-hmm.
It's a project I set aside.
Well, you might not be surprised that in our high holiday services, we sing Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah, we sing Leonard Cohen's Who by Fire, and
yep.
Sometimes we speak Leonard Cohen's anthem. The music was a little too hard for the choir, for the volunteer choir, but we sing both Hallelujah and Who by Fire. So
I've also sung during services his song The Story of Isaac, which is the retelling of the binding of Isaac from the point of view of Isaac.
Mm-hmm. So
there's a lot.
Leonard Cohen has become liturgy as well, liturgy for our
exactly service. Right.
I was fascinated by your opening story and then later your story about the Uber driver in Pittsburgh. Your driver in taking you from the airport in Ben-Gurion to Yerushalayim to Jerusalem, and then your Uber driver in Pittsburgh. Seems like you like cab drivers. So tell us a little bit about your experiences with your drivers.
Well, it's funny you mention this, because in Hasidic lore, the Balagola, the wagon driver, often has an exalted role as the source of hidden wisdom.
Well,
what happened in Jerusalem?
The Baal Shem's Balagola, one of my favorite all-time stories. So, yes.
Exactly. The story about Ben-Gurion to Jerusalem had such an impact on me that it took me about a week to process it, which in short was I got into a van, a Sheirut, at Ben-Gurion Airport on my way to Jerusalem, and when we got there, we realized that my suitcase was not there, and I panicked, and he made a phone call, and a fellow driver had found the suitcase and brought us to us in Jerusalem, and 15 minutes later, I was reunited with my suitcase, and I proceeded to give a tip to the driver, and he refused. He said, there's no such thing as a tip here. I said to me in Hebrew, and then he recounted both versions of the mitzvah, both in Exodus and Deuteronomy, and the mitzvah of returning lost objects to their rightful owners, and then he said, we are responsible. And that was enough to really throw me, to realize that what the liberal Jewish world needs is a larger sense of responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond the self, beyond the family, yes, we feel to the world, but also, again, to our people, to Tikkun Ha'am. As for the other driver, that's a story in and of itself. That was the guy who picked me up in Pittsburgh at the airport, and when he learned that I was a rabbi, he told me a very slow, unfolding story. Not even know the fact that he's not Jewish, which plays into this, is about how his father had been an American GI who liberated a camp, who found a woman, who fell in love with a woman who turned out to be a French-Jewish woman. It turned out that she'd been raped by a German soldier. She was carrying the fetus that resulted from this abomination. And then on this ride, he's telling me how that's how he wound up with a French-Jewish half-brother. And I was weeping. I just said, God sent you to me. God sent you to me so I could learn this story.
I mentioned earlier that you would tell us how to subscribe to Martini Judaism, your blog.
It's really very simple. Just go to religionnews.com and look for Martini Judaism. I think you can subscribe there. I write twice a week, sometimes three times a week. I've been writing a lot about my experience in Poland, as you can imagine. And the reason I call it Martini Judaism, for those who want to be shaken and stirred, is that I believe this is the role of not only Judaism, but religion in general. That, yes, it has been said famously that the role of religion is to comfort the afflicted and to afflict the comfortable. And I sometimes believe that we've allowed religion in America to settle into a kind of a bourgeois state of just making us comfortable. But we're living in times now in which we have sources of comfort, yoga, for example, massage, various kinds of physical and spiritual activity and meditation, but I think the role of religion should be to shake us out of our our security and to help us grow beyond who we are. So even though I'm not a drinker of martinis, yes, I think that religion should shake us and should stir us, should shake our pre-assumptions and should stir us to greater action.
So I want you to know, my beloved listeners, what it is to write a column once a week, twice a week, sometimes three times a week, as Rabbi Salkin does. When we come back after this final break, I will tell you what it's like. Meanwhile, know that I'm here with Rabbi Jeffrey Salkin, author of Tikkun HaAm, Israel and the Crisis of Liberal Judaism, Repairing Our People, Wicked Son Press. We'll be back after these messages for our final section. This is Spirit Talk Live. I'm Rabbi Wayne Dussek, as always, inviting you to come on the journey. Join in the quest.
In sacred literature and the Bible, God is known by many names. However, which name for God embodies the spiritual wholeness and essence of God? Discover The Real Name of God is a new book by Rabbi Wayne Dossick. He explores and finds the real name of God. Why is that important? Because the name of God unites all religions and is embedded within us. Get The Real Name of God at your favorite bookstore or online at Amazon.com. The ideas in this book can be world-changing. The Real Name of God by Rabbi Wayne Dossick.
One of the best things about the technology available today is being able to listen to HealthyLife.net on the go or while I'm at work. Typically, headphones or earphones are required, and let's face it, sometimes they break or get worn out or lost. To find my latest solution to this, I found the Earphone Solutions website while browsing the HealthyLife.net advertiser page. There are plenty of options from basic inexpensive on-the-go earphones to studio-quality headphones for when I really have time to enjoy everything from rock to Bach. Earphone Solutions on the HealthyLife.net advertiser page.
Rabbi Dr. Wayne Dossick is the award-winning author of 8 best-selling books. Living Judaism, The Complete Guide to Jewish Belief, Tradition, and Practice, is now a classic, used in synagogues, churches, seminaries, and universities throughout the country as the basic introduction to Judaism text, and in homes as the perfect one-volume reference to Jewish faith and observance. 20-Minute Kabbalah, co-written with his wife Ellen Kaufman Dossick, uses Tree of Life mysticism to offer a daily personal spiritual practice that brings you to God, your soul knowing, and your heart's desires. The accompanying audio CD, angelically sung by cantor Kathy Robbins, guides you through all the sweet and holy chants. These and other fine books by Rabbi Dossick, including When Life Hurts and Soul Judaism, are available at Amazon.com. For more information about Indigo Children, visit the website www.soulbysoul.com. And for more information about Kabbalah, visit the website www.20minutekabbalah.com. Let Wayne Dossick's books expand your knowledge and enrich your life.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
This is Spirit Talk Live. I'm Rabbi Wayne Dossick. I'm here with Rabbi Jeffrey K. Salkin, Tikkun HaAm, Israel and the Crisis of Liberal Judaism, Repairing Our People, Wicked Son Press. Rabbi Salkin, you there?
I am here.
Oh, good. So, talk to us about what you perceive. I wanted to tell the people what a great thing it is that you do in writing your columns so regularly. For 18 years, I had a biweekly column called Rabbinic Insights in the San Diego Jewish Times. It was 1,000 publishable words every 2 weeks, 500 articles over the course of the 18 years. It's a lot of writing, it's a lot of thinking, it's a lot of deadlines, and so the work that you churn out is not only brilliant, but highly to be praised.
Well, thank you so much.
So,
thank you.
What do you see as the future of Judaism in America?
Well, listen, I don't know what it's going to be. I can only suggest to you that I think that there are directions it could take. My favorite direction is that, believe it or not, perhaps it would be instructive for even Ashkenazic Jews to pick up on some of the wisdom of the Mizrahi, which is the Arab Jewish tradition, which is a Judaism that takes that takes Judaism very seriously and takes ritual very seriously, family and tribe, etc., but not necessarily halakha.
Well,
not necessarily halakha.
It's very interesting. You and I think in many, many of the same ways, and I think perhaps it's because in the New York School of the Hebrew Union College, you were a disciple of Rabbi Dr. Eugene Borowitz, and in Cincinnati,
yes,
I was a disciple of Rabbi Dr. Jacob Petakowski, who were the two traditionalists on the faculty, and perhaps they shaped our thinking more than we even know.
Mm-hmm. I think you're absolutely right. And look, to me, a rich Judaism, in which we embrace the possibilities, is what I would look for. That's what I would want.
And what do you? What possibilities can you see? I know you don't have a magic ball here, and you're not a soothsayer.
Well, I've always believed that Shabbat, as family time, is precisely what this culture needs. In one of the chapters in the book, I talk about Judaism as a counterculture, which is a way of speaking out against some of the cultural excesses, consumerism, materialism, and putting Judaism to work in combating that. And that's one of the main themes of my rabbinate, by the way. It hasn't always been a popular topic. But then again, I like to shake and stir people.
One of our colleagues put up on our Facebook post today that one of his congregants told him that the three-year-old could not come to the Tot services for the high holidays because they had already paid for the whole year of Tot soccer.
Yeah.
So these are...
I know. We're fighting a cultural battle uphill, my friend.
Right. And all the kids who had to go to soccer instead of Shabbos morning services throughout my career, not one of them became a professional soccer player.
Exactly right.
And not one of them knows Shabbos well enough anymore. Right. We have a lot to do.
Yes, we do. And we're doing it.
You know, you asked me in the beginning, I think off air, what I'm thinking about these days. I'm thinking more and more about faith.
Mm-hmm.
About belief, about God,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we've been social justice people, we've been community people, we've been all kinds of we've been cultural people, but we haven't been what our people have been throughout the generations, and that is people of faith. And
I totally agree with you.
Without that, we probably will be in big trouble.
Agreed.
All right. Well,
all right, buddy.
Rabbi Jeffrey Salkin, thank you so much. The book, my friend.
Thank you.
Tikkun Olam, Israel and the Crisis of Liberal Judaism. I have to tell you, as an author myself, I look at the blurbs. He has blurbs from some of the elite of the Jewish world right now. Repairing Our People, Wicked Son Press. And so we thank you for the book. And we thank you for being with us on air today. And we also thank Doc Collins, our extraordinary musician who plays our theme song each and every week. I don't know if you caught it, Rabbi Salkin.
Hayom,
hayom, hayom. And the good folks at Healthy Life Net, Linda McKenzie, the visionary founder, and our incredible producer, Jay Cruz, who've made us at Spirit Talk Live part of the Healthy Life family for these 15 years. Next month, which will be, as always, the third Wednesday of the month, November 20th, my holy wife, Ellen Kaufman-Dossick, who is our guest a couple of times a year on These Cosmic Times, returns with an update on what's happening spiritually and energetically in our world and in our cosmos. Ellen's channeled information helps make our sense of our chaotic lives and gives guidance and direction for personal and cosmic understanding and fulfillment. So much has been going on in our world lately. Ellen has not been on the program in a few months, so there is much to tell. And I would tell you, folks, between now and the November program will be the American election. And so I ask you to do what is right. What is right for our country, what is right for our world. Until next month, be good and do good, be sweet and be holy. Turn your awareness to oneness consciousness, for in oneness consciousness you are surrounded by the recognition and the reality of one God, one world, one people, the power and the promise of Eden on earth once again. That's why we invite you this month and every month to come on the journey, join in the quest. I'm Rabbi Wayne Dussek. This is Spirit Talk Live. Until next month, Shalom, Salam, Pax, Peace.